It was most definitely not at the luxury end of the scale. But slow as the ship was, it still represented the fastest route down to the Glitterbend. The Highburn shuttles made that run more swiftly, but no Highburners came anywhere near Idlewild. It didn't take an economics theorist to understand why. Most of Idlewild's clients barely had the funds to cover their own revival, let alone an expensive shortcut to Chasm City. I'd first have had to travel to the parking swarm, and then negotiate a slot on a Highburner, with no guarantee that one was available until a later flight. Amelia had advised against that, saying that there were not nearly so many Highburners operating as before. Before what? I didn't have a chance to ask. And that the time-saving compared to getting straight on the slow shuttle would have been marginal at best. Eventually the elevator reached the connecting passage to the Strelnikov, and my mendicant friends bade me farewell. They were all smiles now, as if the bruises on my face were just another psychosomatic manifestation of the Houseman virus, and nothing they were responsible for. "Best of luck, Mr. Mirabel." The mendicant with the cosh gave me a cheery wave. "Thanks. I'll send a postcard, or maybe I'll come back and let you know how I got on." "That would be nice." I spat out a final coagulating globule. "Don't count on it." A few other prospective immigrants were being manhandled aboard ahead of me, mumbling drowsily in unfamiliar languages. Inside we were shunted through a disorientating maze of narrow crawlways, until we reached a hub somewhere deep in the Strelnikov's bowels. There we were assigned accommodation cubicles for the journey down to the Glitterbend. By the time I got to mine, I was weary and aching, feeling like an animal that had come off second best in a fight and had crawled back to its den to lick its wounds. I was glad of the privacy of the cubicle. It wasn't fragrantly clean, but it wasn't filthy either, just some yellowing hybrid of the two. There was no artificial gravity on the Strelnikov, for which I was grateful. It wouldn't have been prudent to spin her or accelerate her too hard, so the cubicle came outfitted with a zero-G bunk bed and various nourishment and sanitary facilities designed with the same lack of gravity in mind. There was a general network console, which looked like it should have been lovingly preserved in a museum of cybernetics, and there were stained and faded warning notices stuck to every available surface, appertaining to what could and couldn't be done in the ship, and how to get out of it as quickly as possible if something went wrong. Periodically, a thick-accented voice came over a tannoy system, with announcements concerning delays to the departure, but eventually the voice said that we had cast off from Idlewild, engaged drive, and were on our way down. The departure had been so soft I hadn't noticed it. I picked at the shards of tooth in my mouth, mapped the painful extremities of the bruises the mendicants had given me, and gradually fell asleep. Chapter 10. On the day that the passenger was to awake, and nothing would ever be the same after that, Sky and his two closest associates were riding a service train along the Santiago spine, rumbling down one of the narrow access tunnels which threaded the ship from nose to tail. The train moved at a few lumbering kilometers per hour, stopping now and then to allow its crew to offload stores, or to wait for another train to clear the tunnel section ahead. As usual, Sky's companions were passing the time with tall stories and boasts, while Sky played devil's advocate, unable to share fully in their fun, but more than willing to ruin it if he saw an opportunity. "Viglietti told me something yesterday," Norquinco said, raising his voice to be heard above the roar of the train's passage. "He said he didn't believe it himself."